Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
But it is what it is. With me today, per his usual seat, is Jerry ATM Taylor. What's going on, JT Money?
Nothing much. Just trying to enjoy the day and talking some fantasy, talking some sports, which we like to do.
And you know this man. Okay, check this out. I updated our page. It now has our banner on it. It also has our different shows. So it's not just about Vic and his cohorts. It's about Vic, Jerry, Jeff, Black, Kim, and even Mac.
Where would we see this at?
Huh?
Where would we see this at? Where, if I was just listening for the first time, where can I see this at?
Just go to blogtalkradio.com/PICHPK and you'll get that new update there. I just want to put that out there. That's all.
Okay.
But on today's show, we pretty much have a jam-packed show, so we can't lollygag around.
Well, who does that?
Huh?
Who does that?
I did that.
No, who does that? Who lollygags around? Speak for yourself, my man.
You. Well, anyway, on this episode, we're going to talk about Kobe Bryant. You know, he likes to run off at the mouth, now he's backtracking.
Black Mamba.
Yeah, the Black Mamba originally stated that they could beat the original Dream Team. Then he went back and clarified the statement, as we all know, a couple of days ago, stating that they could win maybe one game against them. So we're going to talk about the original Dream Team and their cast of characters, who I'm going to let Jerry be, and the current Dream Team, or the current U.S. Olympic team, going head up. And I requested that EA Sports do a 1,000-game sim just to see what would happen with those players in their prime versus these players in their prime. I don't know if EA Sports did it, but I can give you my thoughts on it. We're also going to talk about the AFC East and AFC South, fantasy-wise, for all of you fantasy football lovers out there, who we are. Who you think you are, we are. That was my Rob. Never mind. You probably don't watch bowling. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Anyway, we're going to hear from Antonio Pierce on the Baltimore Ravens issues, because not only are they having issues with Joe Flacco and Ray Rice, well, a very prominent member of their team is threatening not to come to training camp and or play this year.
He's another diva, man.
Hey, but he's worth it though.
He goes. He does this every single year. He does this, man. Come on.
I know. We're also going to talk about Matt Forte. He's talking about whether a deal gets done or not by Monday, whether he'll sit out or not.
He's saying, pay the man.
I agree. They just paid Drew Brees, and we're gonna hear from Chris Mortensen of ESPN, as well as Pierre Thomas of the New Orleans Saints, in reference to Drew Brees getting paid. We'll also hear from Kobe and Blake Griffin. I believe you uploaded this Griffin soundbite, 58-second Griffin soundbite you put in
mm-hmm.
there?
Yes, sir.
All right. I didn't know what feesh was or fee was, so I kind of deleted that. I'm sorry.
What was that?
You put something here with fee, F-E-E-H.
Oh, Louis Free. That was about Sandusky. Don't worry about that.
Okay, well, I deleted it. I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it. No need to be sorry about it.
Oh, I know. But ladies and gentlemen,
yes,
we got a lot of great things to talk about today. And if you want to get in on the conversation, you can dial 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. And we'll let you in. We also have a chat room open if you want to go in there and spout off without being – if you want to be anonymous and go in the chat room and not have a voice to your – a name to your voice and your message.
Show some guts. Show some guts. Call in. Tell us who you are. State your opinion.
Hey.
If you listen to this show, call in. Come on now.
I'd appreciate that. We'll also hear from Kevin Durant about being the sixth man off the bench. KD is one of the premier players in the NBA.
Wow.
And yet on this Olympic team, he is the sixth man coming off the bench.
Wow.
So we'll hear from him and how he feels about that. Also, I want to get a little bit into right now while the iron is hot. This Joe Paterno situation, whereas documents, interviews, and things like that demonstrate that Joe Paterno had a bigger part in covering up this Sandusky issue than a lot of people wanted to believe and state. Now, Stephen A. Smith of ESPN came on the show several months ago. Stated he feels that Penn State should get the death penalty as far as athletic sports goes, college athletic sports goes, to prove a point. But he also stated that he wants to make sure that the NCAA allows each kid that, you know, that signed up for an athletic scholarship, whatever it is, give them the opportunity to transfer to a different school and give them an additional year of eligibility. He feels as though that Penn State should not appear on TV or any type of publicity for the next 5 years. So let's talk about that, Jerry. First of all, your thoughts on Paterno's, protecting the label or the shield, like Roger Goodell gets to say or says, while Paterno protecting the shield and the label that is Penn State.
Well, we had talked about this on the Thursday show, and I had mentioned that I ran through some clips, one of the ones that you deleted, but no big deal. It's no big deal. That he knew a lot, and really controlled a lot of what didn't happen. Let me put it that way. He knew he was constantly in the loop of what was going on. The thing is that some of these supporters or Joe Pa supporters, I should say, say that he wasn't the man in charge. He was the head coach, but he wasn't the president or counsel for the school. So the ultimate decision whether things got out or not was with the higher-ups. Well, come on. Anybody with any kind of sense knows what kind of power Joe Pa had. He was an icon in college football in the country and an icon on that campus, and whatever he said, goat. When you have that, and I'll state this before when I said it on Thursday, when you have, in 2004, I do believe it was, excuse me, the college president coming to Joe Pa's home and ask him to step down or to go away, basically. And Joe Pa unceremoniously threw the college president out of his house and told him to get lost. He's not going anywhere. You know how much power Joe Pa has, because all this came to light in 2011. And what I just told you took place 8 years, 7 years before that. So even though they wanted him to go away, they couldn't fire him because of the backlash it would be from the school and the Penn State supporters. So you know the man controlled whatever information was sent out. That's what I'm trying to say. He controlled whatever information was sent out, and according to this report, he didn't want it to get out because he would feel it would damage the reputation of the school, and it would be bad publicity. That's unbelievable that you would think that a coach with as much experience and as much power as he has would take the publicity over a college versus kids getting ravaged habitually. I mean, it blows my mind.
It's the politics of it, though. You know, you have to look at that aspect. I do not condone or agree with what happened, whether it was Joe Paterno or the Board of Trustees or whoever it was that decided, you know, we're going to keep this under wraps and you know, still let this guy come out. I'm not going to, you know, lay blame on anybody, but the political side of it is, if this gets out, what happens to this brand, to this legacy that we've built so far? Now, in the long run, and Bobby Bowden said it, when people play Penn State, and if it is on TV and someone flashes to that statue outside of the stadium, it's not going to be about the football legacy, Joe Paterno. It's going to be about Zandesky and what happened under Joe Pa, and how a community, you know, was controlled by this sports icon and the university. It's sad, in my opinion. Now, his son says that all the evidence isn't out there, and there are a lot of independent studies or interviews and things of that nature that really didn't show Paterno's involvement. But
you know what, man? Come on. Give it up. Give
it
up.
I gotta play both sides, though.
I understand what you're saying, but give it up. I don't have the articles with me, but it's like numerous hundreds of hours of interviews from people in higher up in administration and coaches and whoever else are at Penn State. Endless amount of documents, including emails back and forth from members that were included in Penn State. Come on. Everybody knew before this came out that Joe Pa, because of his power that he had, and the guy was his right-hand man. He was his. It wasn't like he was a underling. He was one of the better defensive coaches in college football before he got canned. For this, he got canned. He didn't get canned because his job his job performance was bad. He got canned because of this situation back in 1998. So, they kept him here. They kept him at Penn State with payoffs that was unprecedented from the president and whoever, to keep him under wraps, keep him in one isolated situation so he wouldn't go to another program and perpetuate the same things he was doing.
Correct.
For over a decade, he was doing this. Over a decade that they know of. Now, it could have been happening before that, but it was
it did, because you just don't wake up one day at 50-something years old and decide you're going to molest some kids.
Yes.
It's something that went on for a while. But I'm going to play this real quick because I think this is apropos for what we're talking about.
Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely.
And I meant to play that, and you're absolutely right about that. This is definitely a corrupt power base that let this happen over a decade, almost going on, 14, 15 years, which is crazy, man. I get so incensed, and you can see the emotion and passion coming out of me because this is I can't believe.
Well,
this is a problem, and I'm sorry for going on, but this is a problem with people that have too much power. They have a tendency to think they're insulated from anything happening to them, and you see this over and over and over again, that these people, coaches or whoever, have a power that no one can control, and bad things like this happen when you don't have a power structure that has some checks and balances in it. In federal government, college football, or whatever.
Whatever. Well, let me ask now, since you took me back to where I wanted to go, as
mm-hmm.
far as oversight.
Right.
What do you think the NCAA should do, or should they do anything? Some people say no, the NCAA don't need to step in, and some people say yes because they're willing to, you know, penalize a school for a kid's previous, you know, pay for performance thing. This is this situation is even worse than a kid accepting some money to play a game. It's not like he threw the game, but this is worse. What do you think the NCAA should do anything at all?
Well, you know who Clint Eastwood is, right?
Make my day.
Clint Eastwood made several earlier in his career, several movies. I guess spaghetti movies or whatever you want to call them, westerns. One of his movies is how I feel this should happen to the Penn State football program. Penn State.
Hang 'em high.
Exactly.
I knew you were going.
Hang 'em high, and that's how I feel. The thing about him, they're saying that this was not part of the school. This was a football program. Bull. It was the whole environment of the school trying to supposedly protect the brand of Penn State. When if you had come out and said this guy is doing this, you would have been lauded for it. I can't understand why you would just hold this inside. There's got to be more to it. Something else has got to be going on, if you understand what I mean. Conspiracy type of things. I can't believe a coach with so much knowledge that he would actually said, no, we can't let this get out because it would hurt the publicity. When, in fact, if you came out with this, like I said again, you would be lauded for bringing out a perpetrator like this, a predator, I should say, like this, like the Sandusky was. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's not an easy topic to talk about because
well, you see how
kids are abused.
How emotional I get, man, about it. So
I know. Kids are abused every day and are tortured and things of that nature. And to see this happen and only one man actually take the fall for it,
right,
is kind of bad. But we talked about this some time ago that, and I believe Black brought it up when this first came out, that if Sandusky takes the fall for everything, then everybody's happy because everybody else is protected. But I don't think that's going to happen in this case here. But I think that Penn State should be held accountable. The death penalty, maybe not. Maybe a couple years suspended from TV and no bowl games for a couple years, unless, well, this year it might be too late for it. But and if they do that, they need to give the kids an opportunity to transfer to another school and have their eligibility reinstated and or given another year. I like Stephen A's solution a lot better than I have heard from other people. But that's that case. Let's move on to a different subject matter. Let's hear from Michael Jordan real quick, because I know you have the sound bite in here. Let's hear what the supposed great one has to say about the Dream Team.
Kobe thinks that this version would beat the 92 Dream Team.
So he said yesterday.
Here's what Michael Jordan had to say about that. Told the Associated Press, I absolutely laughed when hearing Bryant's comments. I imagine he's trying to say it to...
Well, that's your sound bite. So he laughed. Pippen came out and said they would beat him by 25. Larry Bird said, yeah, they probably could beat us now. That was his backhanded comment, or backhanded compliment.
I hear you, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, he said, because they could probably beat us now. You know, I'm old. I haven't been playing ball in a year, in years, whatever. And it brings up a great debate because, again, and I saw this on ESPN, they were talking about the need for the Dream Team back in the day because we were embarrassed and our college athletes were not living up to the standard that we were the best place in the world to play basketball for. They got a Dream Team, and you know, it kept going on and on and on. And now Mark Cuban and several other people are quietly stating, let's have a cap on age to play for the team, which is, I believe, 22 or 23.
Well, that's going to happen.
That's
supposedly going to happen. After this, I think that age limit is going to happen.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I was getting to that, saying that I think that's a good idea because that takes out your – I mean, you said LeBron back when he was 23, 24, but LeBron is now, 26, 27, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And he would be eligible to play, but you still get your college athletes like Davis, Unibrow, who's exciting, not yet NBA experienced, but they still get some of your fresh young players to come in there and do it because those players wouldn't have received the big, big bucks just yet, and the owners wouldn't have that much liability if they go down. Case in point, Blake Griffin. Now, I know you have a soundbite here. It's a minute long. Is this about his injury, or is this about his playing with the team?
No, getting injured. Didn't describe what the injury was. It's just about him getting injured.
Okay. Well, pretty much, ladies and gentlemen, Blake Griffin, he re-injured the meniscus, I believe it was.
He tore it.
Yeah, he tore it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just had successful surgery a year or so ago during his rookie year on the same exact area. Now,
I didn't know that. It's the same knee?
Yeah, same knee.
And that's not good.
A couple days prior, he signed an extension or a new contract for $90-plus million with the Clippers. And that investment is now in jeopardy.
Ouch.
Because he might not make it back in time for the beginning of the season.
Ouch.
If at all this season. So the question becomes, you know, are these kids or are these guys, NBA players, that we all love, is it worth trying to show the world up again that we are the best? Now, we went in there one year, and this was Allen Iverson and Carmelo and all these other cats thinking they were all hot dogs, and we got beat, and we didn't win gold. And the whole world or everybody was like, see, they're not that good anyway. So we had to put together the team again and just destroy people. But last time, at the last Olympics, we only won by 12 points in the final game.
Still won. I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get your best shot from these players. Plus, you got some pros playing on these other teams.
I gotcha.
So, you know, it's good to have, and the United States likes to be the big bully, whatever, especially in basketball. So it's good to have huge double-digit wins, 20, 25, 15, 20, 25 points. Sometimes it's not going to happen like that. Sometimes these teams rise up and make a decent game of it. Even though you may win by double digits, you still win the game. And that was the bottom line. You still win the game. If you get 1 point or 40 points, it don't make a difference. You still win the game.
Well,
you still get the championship.
Well, that goes into my point about this team not being able to beat the 92 Dream Team. So we're going to get to a quick role play, you and I, and then we're going to get back to Kevin Durant coming off the bench for this Olympic team. You are the 92 team since you are the old guy, and I am the current Olympic team. So, hey, George, I know you're sitting in Charlotte. You can't do nothing. You really can't build a franchise.
What's that got to do with my plan? Ain't got nothing to do with my plan.
All I'm saying is right now you got fat cat syndrome, and you couldn't beat us in a full game. You can't. And this is the Black Mamba talk.
Hey,
be honest. We could beat y'all one game. Y'all back then, y'all weren't that good. You weren't that good.
Oh, no, huh? Let me run down this and send me tell me how many Hall of Famers or potential Hall of Famers that you have on your team right now compared to what I know are Hall of Famers right now.
David
Robinson, Patrick Ewing was coming off the bench, and he's a potential Hall of Famer. Larry Bird, Scottie Pippen, me, Clyde Drexler, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Chris Mullin, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson. And Charles and I were unstoppable at the time that you of the 92 season. You ain't got nothing for us. What are you going to talk about, Kobe? You going to talk about LeBron? You going to talk about maybe Kevin Durant, and you got him as a sixth man, which makes no sense to me? Right then you telling me that you ain't got yourself together. If you got Kevin Durant coming off the bench as a sixth man when he should be starting.
Well, now listen, Mike. You know, everybody said they want to be like Mike, but now they want to be the Black Mamba. You know, and what I'm saying is we are more athletic than you guys ever were. Ever were. That half-court game, y'all couldn't run up and down with us. You got slow-ass Larry Bird. You had Hakeem the Dream. No, you had David Robinson, Admiral. He was good, but he had bad knees. Maybe you can beat us up a little bit on the inside, but perimeter shooting, y'all couldn't mess with us. We would rain threes all day.
Well, let
and
me talk about
it. I'd cross you over.
Yeah, okay. You think so, huh? Well, AccuScore. You've heard of AccuScore before, right?
Yeah, I heard of AccuScore.
Okay, they ran.
I agree when I score.
Okay, they ran. Well, check this out. They ran 10,000 simulations of our team versus you boys. And I noticed I said you boys because the fact is the winning percentage between the two teams, we would win 54% of the time. Our points per game, even though it was 1.78 points versus 77 points, and our field goal percentage was even better, almost 49% versus you guys, supposedly good shooters, 45%. And simulated games, the outcome of the game through AccuScore, we won by 8 points. So, you know, we can't absolutely play the game because we are older and quite naturally, and you are who you are at your age right now. But this is as close as we can get to see who would be the best 11 Hall of Famers compared to maybe, I give you, four possible Hall of Famers on your team. No contest. End of story. Go home, little boy, with your tail tucked between your legs and think another thought.
Well, like you said, 54% of the time, that's almost half, right? Almost half. That means we won the other 46% of the time. So, old man, shine your bald head up, lose some weight, try to put on a winning team. And you know, we are good. We are the new generation.
Well,
what you wanted to be back in the day when you had to punch Scotty in the face and Steve Kerr in the mouth to get them to do what you got to do. All I got to do is give them a look. I don't got to lay my hands on nobody.
There's only one guy on your team that can talk and walk the walk that I can. And that happens to be...
me.
Exactly. That's you, the only one. But...
And I'd lock you down. I'd lock you down, MJ. Back in the day, I'd lock you down.
Listen, man. Your defense ain't what it is. You couldn't play a defender anywhere close to it the way I was. So if you think about that with my six rings, think again, because I'm the man and I always will be the man. When they talk about the best in the game, who do they talk about first? Who do they talk about first?
Wilt Chamberlain.
No. Best in the game, they talk about me. Guaranteed. Six championships, numerous MVPs in all-star and in regular season play. They talk about me. Not you, me.
Listen here, Michael. Go find Tito, which is your Scottie Pippen. You know, find your Tito. You know, it's all good. End scene. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our quick little thing. Jerry's doing the fastest tip. which is good. But honestly, I feel the same way Jerry feels that was playing Michael Jordan. I believe that team, even though I couldn't stand Michael Jordan, that team would ultimately crush any Olympic team that we had there for any time after that. Maybe not the second dream team, because you added Hakeem and a few other players that added diversity to the team. But even without Isaiah Thomas, that team was still a wonderful, wonderful team and very hard to defend, as well as shoot on, because you had bigs down there that could block your shot and could post you up. This group, not so much. LeBron isn't a post-up guy. Never has. He might be later on in his life. Who's going to cover Karl Malone?
LeBron's a decent post-up guy. I have to give him that.
There's no way he would get in the box versus Karl Malone or Charles Barkley.
Right. Especially Barkley in that day and age, because Barkley was in his absolute prime. It was unstoppable. So
straight monster. I mean, who's going to stop John Stockton? Westbrook? Westbrook can't guard himself. Stockton would just set up, pass after pass after pass. There's a lot of stuff there. Now, I give it to the current team. They're more athletic as far as running up and down the court, but that means you're not playing defense. So go ahead. Don't play defense. Go ahead and do what you do. But I hope the Yaki score numbers get out a little more after this show, because I think it's important to realize that you can't poo-poo on your past, your predecessors who set it up for you. Yeah, you could probably beat them one time back in the day, but, that'll probably be it. But let's talk about Kevin Durant real quick, coming off the bench. As you said, I think it's a travesty that he's the guy coming off the bench. But you got LeBron in front of him, and I don't know.
It was cool to come off the bench for the first time, and it's whatever they need that spark. I'm gonna come out and try to give them a spark. So I was looking forward to having different roles playing with USA. So it was kind of fun for me, actually.
And Black, Mike Wright, one of our beat reporter, he's out at the games right now, as a matter of fact. But they did the same thing to Dwayne Wade last time. And Dwayne Wade ended up being like the MVP, or should have been the MVP, because he was a spark. He was the one that powered the U.S. through to the gold medal last Olympics. But is it right to have KD sitting on the bench when you don't have a true big? I mean, KD
makes no sense to me.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because KD he's not a center, but he's better than half of the centers that are coming in the world, even though Ibaka and the Gasol brothers are going to be on the same team, on the Spanish team. That's formidable, those three boys right there. And I can see that giving us some problems. But who needs to sit on the bench, Jerry, so KD can get on? Or should he be on?
Oh, God. Should KD be on the team? Is that what you're telling me?
No. Should he be starting, or should he be coming off the bench?
Oh, no. He's
starting.
Are you kidding me? You can't possibly be asking me that question.
Who then goes to the bench?
Let me see. Now, let me look at this roster here for a minute here, and I'll see who I can send to the bench. Starting roster. Who's the starters on this team now?
Westbrook at point, Kobe at shooting, LeBron at small. I forgot who the power forward was. It was Blake, but Blake is down. I think they got Davis coming off the bench too, but I'm not sure. And they don't really have a big. They really don't have a big.
Well, let me put it this way. KD's got to be in that lineup. Rather than have a power forward, you got LeBron, you got KD. They got to be in there. LeBron can play a power forward. He needs to be a shorter power forward at 6'8", but because of
size,
he should be able to play it. You gotta put. I can't. KD was in the finals, man. He's the reigning scoring champion, two-time scoring champion. How can you put him on the bench? Come on.
Talk to Mike Krzyzewski.
Come
on. That Duke guy, he's probably
that
mad.
That makes no sense to me.
Hey, it is what it is. It is what it is. But I agree with you. I think he should be in the starting lineup, whether at power forward, small forward, or even at center, because he can he's more athletic than any other nation's team, except, again, I believe, the Spanish team, rather, the Saul brothers and Ibaka.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you would probably go to a smaller, fast-paced, run them up and down the floor team, in my opinion. But it is what it is. Do you think there's a chance, a slight chance, that the American team will not win the gold medal this year?
No.
Oh, Carmelo. Excuse me. It's Carmelo. Carmelo's in there.
No. There's no doubt in my mind that the games may be closer, but I think these guys are committed to playing together to be able to win. When you take some of these teams too lightly, because you are who you are, professional, you're supposed to be the best players in the world, and assume because you got a collection of players together that basically all-star players that you're going to just walk on the court and the win's going to be handed to you. That's not going to be the case. These teams, because they know that they're playing against the best players in the world and from the NBA. And some of these teams have NBA players on them, are going to bring their A-plus game. So these guys, and LeBron and Dwayne Wade, know just because you got named players on your team doesn't guarantee you a championship. So you got to be able to play together and be committed to play as a team in order to knock whoever your opponent is. So there's no doubt in my mind that these guys should be able to get the job done.
I agree. I totally happens. But let's move on to something near and dear, because we're coming down to crunch time here. Let's go to football. Drew Brees, $100 million, 40 of it guaranteed. He's going to net 37 of that, and after taxes, maybe 28, 29. Just for this year.
He got paid. He got paid,
Morris,
my man.
Yes,
you know how I like Drew Brees.
Morris thinks about him getting this contract.
There's been no more prolific passer statistically over these 6 years. He's won a Super Bowl. He's broken Marino's record. He's done all the community work. So I don't know why anybody would begrudge Drew Brees what he is getting, especially since he was a pretty good bargain the last 4 or 5 years especially.
And here's Pierre Thomas, running back for the Saints, talking about how Drew Brees deserves the money.
And he deserves it. He's done a lot for this organization. He does it a lot for New Orleans. You know, he busts his butt, you know, to get to the position where he's at in his career. And, I mean, he set so many records. I mean, the man is a coach of the game, a teacher of the game, and he's a player, too. He's just a great guy.
So we go from Drew Brees, who got paid, and I still think New Orleans is going to end up last in that division this year. We'll talk about that once we get to the NFC. But here's a guy who's still looking to get paid, and maybe he's at the wrong position, but he accounted for 52% of the Bears' offense. And he says he's staying in shape.
No effect at all, because I take, you know, training and preparing for the season very serious, and that's what I do. I'm not going to go into a season out of shape or not prepared for a game or prepared for the entire season.
So even if he doesn't play the whole season, which I think he will, Matt Forte, that is, you still think he needs to be paid as well. First, I want your thoughts on Drew Brees' contract, and then I want you to tell me, do you think Forte is going to end up sitting out part of the training camp, all the training camp, or most of the season until they get to a better deal?
First of all, Drew Brees, I've been saying from the get-go to pay this man, especially since really what's been going on. Even if all this bounty gate hadn't been going on, Drew Brees has done a lot since he's been to that region and to that team. He's done a lot for the team, quite naturally, bringing him a championship, and for the city. He's all-around good guy, gives you his best effort, no problems. I'm not even thinking about bounty gate. They should have not even been screwing around with this guy. He's been number one in a lot of the major categories for a quarterback over several years since he's been there. And it was a no-brainer to me. I'm just pissed or upset that it took so long for it to come about. Drew Brees definitely should have got paid, and I applaud him for holding out and saying that he would not report to training camp unless he got paid because of the experiences he had with San Diego when he was franchised and he got hurt and they threw him away after the 1 year after he got hurt. Matt Forte in the same boat. Matt Forte is like almost 50% of last year, 50% close to it of Chicago's offense. The longest pass plays, and this I don't know if you know this, the longest pass plays that Chicago had last year were screen plays to Matt Forte. They weren't even to the tight ends or to the
wide receiver. It wasn't downfield. It was a short play that he made things happen.
Exactly. The longest plays from line of scrimmage were screen plays, pass plays, I should say. So that just goes to show you that Matt Forte is an integral part of the offense, even though they got Jay Cutler's prime receiver when he was in Denver, Brandon Marshall, and they also signed for Michael Bush. Well, Michael Bush is not Matt Forte. That, plain and simple, he's not Matt Forte. He may steal some goal line carries, but he is not Matt Forte, and Brandon Marshall is something that they needed. Matt Forte is the other piece that they needed in the backfield. He's important to that team, absolutely important to that team. Been a good guy, done his work, kept quiet, and Chicago in their cheap ways are trying to cheap out on him, and it's not right.
I agree with you 100%. I believe we got Black on the line. We're going to have some technical difficulties here with Blog Talk Radio. Black, are you there? All right. Well, I'm going to have to reload that page and see what happens. But
you know that trick. You know that trick. Well, because I've ran across that trick before, so I understand what you're saying.
Well,
you got to go to a different page and come back and his.
Oh, there he is. What's up, Black?
What's going on, fellas? Calling in live from the Nike Basketball Festival. Just finished watching a USA practice. Get a good run there. Got a couple interviews down here, so I'll send them out to you shortly. Just trying to get situated right now. Crushing people out here.
That's cool. We were talking about football, but who is the starting five for the Olympic team? If we know Kobe's at shooting, Westbrook at point, and LeBron's at small forward. Who else is out there?
I believe Chris Paul starts. I believe it's Chris Paul, Kobe.
Oh, Chris Paul.
LeBron, Carmelo, and I think it was Tyson Chandler or Kevin Love at the five.
There you go. See, I told you Carmelo was out there. Now, I don't think Carmelo belongs out there.
They bring KD in. That's 6 man off the bench.
That's what we're talking about.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I'm serious. That's what I'm saying.
KD off the bench is a travesty, man.
Now, remember, Dwayne Wade played that same position for those guys
that.
4 years ago.
Yeah, we talked about that. And he was a spark, and he should have been the MVP of the team when they won gold because he was the spark plug.
Answer me this, Black. Who do you think is a better player, KD right now or Dwayne Wade right now? I understand Dwayne Wade, the last time they played, that he was a sixth man. Well, Dwayne Wade at his time 4 years ago and KD at his time presently, who was a better player?
I'll take KD right now.
Okay.
He just has that S factor. He has everything in the sixth sense.
That's the point I'm making. KD, Dwayne Wade was in that position last time they played, as a sixth man coming off the bench. Now they got KD, but KD's a better player than Dwayne Wade was when he was playing. Why is KD coming off the bench? Come on.
Well, I mean, that's a hell of a guy to bring in off the bench, though, when you know that their starters are done and they have their bench in as well.
Well, the issue I brought up was when they run into Spain and they got to go against Ibaka and the Gasol brothers, you're going to have to take Carmelo out because Carmelo he's not that good of a defensive player and he's not big enough to go against those guys. Now, KD isn't mass-wise big enough, but height-wise, he is. But thanks for that report. We're about to talk. Well, right now, we're talking
about... No problem. I got to go, fellas. I'll check in with you later.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, thanks, Black, coming in from, calling in from the Olympic practice over there. We got people going all over the place, and I love it. Anyway, I agree with you. I think that they should pay Michael Bush. I mean, they shouldn't have paid Michael Bush $49 million before they paid Matt Forte. Michael Bush is a very, very good back. And the timeshare is going to be a killer for Matt Forte owners this year. Even if he comes in, Bush is going to fill a lot of those goal line rushing yards and touchdowns. Hopefully, Forte will get in the end zone as much as Bush will as well. Bush is going to revert back to his role when he was with the Raiders, and Run DMC was the feature back. You know, get down there to goal line, get the touchdown. That's all that counts in fantasy football. Before we move on to our breakdown of the two divisions, which we're going to have to do kind of quickly, let's hear from Antonio Pierce on a Raven and the Raven situation as to why there's dysfunction.
That's not how you want to go into camp. And listen to Ed Reed, you have an unhappy camper. Then you add Ray Rice on top of that, Joe Flacco. This is going to be an interesting training camp. This is one of the strongest, mentally tough teams in the National Football League, the Baltimore Ravens. But how you deal with distractions on both sides of the ball is going to be key. This is where Ray Lewis' leadership is going to come into play. Probably the closest player to Ed Reed is going to have to talk to him, get him in, because you can't have three superstars unhappy. One is bad enough. Three? That's trouble.
It is trouble. As Jerry said earlier in the show, Ed has done this over the past 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to retire. I'm not coming in training camp. But the fact remains that he's been beat up and broken down a lot over the past couple of years. But every time he gets back on the field, he leads his position at interception. And I believe he led the league last year in interceptions. And he missed 6 games? He only played 10 games, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So he is a ball hawk. I would have him over Troy Polamalu because Troy is a good hitter. Troy is not that good at covering folks. Ed Reed, he reads the quarterback like nobody's business. And, you know, if the ball's in the air, he's going to be a Raven and vulture it. You know, that's the way I feel about it. Real quick, tell me what you feel and how you think about the situation.
Ed Reed does this, like I said, he does it. This is an annual thing. He talks a lot. Vents, and then he comes in. So I don't expect anything different to happen. He talks a lot. In the same breath, he also talks about retiring. So this is just an annual thing for Ed Reed. He'll be in camp and he'll be playing, and he'll be playing like he's always been playing for the last few years, unless he gets hurt.
Well, here's a question I'm going to pose to you, and then we'll move on. Who should get paid first, Jerry? Should it be Ray, Joe, or Ed? Now, remember, Ed made a comment about Ladarius Webb getting paid so much money. He's actually the best player, the best D-back. So, talk to me. What do you think? Who do you think gets paid first?
Well, I'm out. First, you can get rid of Ed. I think the two main guys that need to get paid is Joe Flacco and Ray Rice. And Ray Rice is first in my category. Ray Rice is is more important. I understand it's a quarterback driven league, but I think Joe Flacco has reached his ceiling. I don't think he's going to get any better or worse than he is right now. I think he is what he is. Ray Rice is been consistent year in and year out. He's a big cog in that offense for the Ravens. You pay Ray Rice first. You try to pay Joe Flacco with a reasonable contract second. Ed Reed, and who's the other guy you talked about?
It's just those three. Ed Reed,
okay.
Flacco, and
Ed Reed, let me put it this way. You let Ed Reed spout, and you know Ed Reed's going to be the good soldier. Ray Lewis will get him in and say, come on in, stop talking all this garbage. You know you want to play, so he'll come in and play. The two important ones, and the one key one is Ray Rice. You got to pay that man. Come on. He's outplayed his rookie contract. Now, these teams, stop playing games. Pay the man.
I'll say this, and we read it last week. One of the opposing coaches said that they believe that Joe Flacco regressed last year, and he's reached his ceiling. And if you let him be a free agent next year, there are not going to be too many teams that are going to pay him a lot of money to come in and start. But not a lot.
I totally agree.
So I think you roll the dice a little bit and take care of him towards the middle of the season or the end of the season or during free agency. But you got to get that running game going, and you got to pay the little guy so that Flacco can get paid at the end of the year. Because if Flacco and the Ravens make it to the Super Bowl or wherever a long way and have a good record, Flacco's going to receive a lot of praise. But let's get into the AFC East. We're going to go into overtime, I can see right now, because we already have 38 minutes left live. So we're going to be doing this a while today, ladies and gentlemen. Let me see. Let's go with the Buffalo Bills first. Let's start there. Now, remember,
three New York teams. Let's go, man. Let's do it.
All right. I want everybody to remember, if you listened last week and if you didn't, I'm reading from the Sports Illustrated Fantasy Football edition, and in this edition, rival coaches broke down the teams and their players that they play against. So this is what one rival coach had to say about the Buffalo Bills and some of their players. Bills front office is in denial. This offense needed receiving weapons. I mean, David Nelson, where did he come from? Scott Chandler? More of a blocker than a receiving tight end. All they got was T.J. Graham, a receiver from North Carolina State in the third round of the draft. The Bills are pretty predictable in what they do offensively, and defense has started catching up with them last year. When we got ready to play them, we focused on Steve Johnson and Nelson and forced Ryan Fitzpatrick to hold the football and try to find Chandler or Donald Jones. Fitzpatrick wasn't as effective that way. Johnson is a home run threat and a heck of a receiver, but defenses can eliminate him. Nelson came from out of the blue last year. He's not going to blow the doors off the top of the defense this year. He's a big-bodied 6'5 receiver whom defenses needed to watch in the red zone. If the Bills are going to win, they'll have to run the football. Assuming he has recovered from a broken right fibula, Fred Jackson is the team's best back and will tilt most of the mail. But people will see a lot more of C.J. Spiller. Coach Chan Gailey will design plays to get him the ball in space because he sets a dangerous receiver out of the backfield. Shaw Choice gives the Bills a quality third back. He's very good at picking up blitzes, so you'll see him on passing downs. The sleeper they have here is C.J. Spiller. Fred Jackson's season-ending injury in Week 11 last year opened the door for the game-breaking Spiller, who has earned more playing time. Spiller's value will leap further if Jackson struggles in his return. Now, this is probably going to upset you, Jerry, but they are bust. Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Harvard man was near the top of the class early in 2011, but the way he finished, 4 touchdowns, 9 picks in the last 4 games, that lands him here. News that he played through rib injuries should be considered, though. Here we go. First of all, I want you to break down what you just heard from an opposing coach before we go over the schedule.
Well, I have to beg to differ on the wide receivers, saying where did he come from. Apparently, he doesn't play fantasy football because I had David Nelson on a variety of my teams. David Nelson happens to be a very good wide receiver, and he's better suited for the slot position, which is his best position. And I think he's going to thrive in the offense again, especially with another year of Ryan Fitzpatrick and Shane Gailey calling the plays. I'm not going to comment on the running backs because I'm going to do that tomorrow. But I think this team is going to be a surprise team in the AFC East. On the cusp of a playoffs, but I like Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I think you'll see the old Ryan Fitzpatrick earlier in the season versus the later part of the season due to his health issues that he had.
Okay. Well, let's go over the schedule since you feel that way.
Sure.
At the Jets, Kansas City, at Cleveland, New England, at San Fran, at Arizona, home for Tennessee, bye week, at Houston, at New England, Miami, at Indianapolis, Jacksonville, St. Louis, Seattle, in Toronto, so that's a home game, at Miami, and ending home with the Jets. You might be right on the tail end because I see them winning possibly three of their last five, so maybe. Go ahead. What do you think?
My estimate of what their record is going to be, and some of these are on the edge. I think they're going to win seven games, 7-9. That's what I'm thinking about the Buffalo Bills, and just not getting there to get into the playoffs. So
I agree with you. I just counted seven games as well. I think they sweep Miami. I think they beat Jacksonville and St. Louis and Indianapolis. Those are the three games, the last game in November and the first two games in December.
Mm-hmm.
I think Seattle surprises them. But they then come back and go to Miami and beat them, but they end with a loss to the Jets.
Well,
so I think they begin in
I gave them doesn't make a difference one way or the other, but I gave them a win at against Seattle because they're playing Seattle on a road, who's not a good road team, and they're playing Seattle later in the season, which that means cold weather to me. So Seattle coming from
They're going to Toronto, so it's going to be cold. Might even be snowing.
Well, then that's the case. They're going to be playing inside. They're going to be playing in a dome. I don't think they play outside in Toronto. So
Yeah, they do.
Is that right?
No. The Redskins. No. I think the Redskins played them outside.
Okay.
I think they played them in the dome that the Blue Jays were in. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Of course, I was overseas, so I didn't get to see the game.
Well, that's a toss-up game whether they win seven games or six games. I gave them a win because Seattle has to come. Seattle's on the road, so even though it's in Toronto. So.
Well, I agree with you, 7-9. I don't think they make the playoffs. Chan Gailey is a good coach, but I don't think he's the coach that gets them over the hump. But I think he gets one more year because Mario Williams and that defense will help a lot. It will help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on down to Miami. And this publication came out before Chad Ochocinco joined the Miami Dolphins. So
won't make a difference.
And David Garrard. So let's go in here and see what opposing coach had to say. The new coach, Joe Philbin, and coordinator Mike Sherman both have Green Bay ties. You're going to see a lot of the West Coast offense. They have to open up the offense because they don't have a dominant running game. Quarterback battle will not be much of a battle. I think David Garrard will stun everyone and win the job because his leadership and experience. He's not washed up because the rookie Ryan Tannehill, I think he'll start off as a third quarterback behind Matt Moore. I kind of agree with all that, too.
Tannehill just doesn't have a lot of experience at quarterback. He was a receiver his first 2 years at Texas A&M, and now all of a sudden, he's going to be the face of the franchise. I don't see it. Starting receivers Brian Hartline and Devon Best had 4 touchdowns combined last year. Best should have the better year of the two. He was targeted more than Hartline, but position will be a major concern for the staff. Tight end Anthony Donald doesn't add much as a pass catcher. Reggie Bush will have to be a workhorse back, and more involved as a receiver. They'll try to take advantage of his ability in space. Backup Daniel Thomas was a good complement to Bush last year. He has more toughness running the ball than Bush, but is more of an outside guy. I understand the drafting of Lamar Miller. They already had Bush and Thomas have needs in other areas. I also think that Chad Ochocinco is going to start over Hartline. It's going to be Ochocinco, Devon Best, and then Hartline. But the sleeper they have here is Brian Hartline, one of the best bet sleeper picks out there. With ex-Dolphin Brandon Marshall gone, 81 catches have to go to someone, and Hartline has the best physical tools of any of the receivers. He'll come cheaply, too. They have Anthony Fasano as a bust. I'm not going to read as to why, but they just have him as a bust. All right, JT, what do you think about the synopsis? And we'll go over the schedule once you give me that.
Brian Hartline? Come on. Brian Hartline? Who? Who? You got Ochocinco, Brian Hartline. They have no receivers. Devon Best is a slot receiver, and he's probably the, I wouldn't say the better of the receivers, but he's the, in my opinion, probably the quickest. This team is, I don't know, man. You got David Garrard, you got Matt Moore. I think it's Matt Moore, right?
Matt Moore.
And you got Brian Tannehill. Right there, you're in trouble. Right there, you're in trouble. David Garrard and Matt Moore are serviceable quarterbacks. Brian Tannehill, quite naturally, is a rookie. I think they say David Garrard is the first on the food chain, and Matt Moore is behind it. I like Matt Moore as a quarterback. I don't think David Garrard is going to be long for that starting job. Especially with his health issues, getting hurt, because he likes to get hurt quite a bit. This team's got is building quite naturally with a new coach, but it's not going to happen this year. It's not going to happen this year.
Okay, I mean, I understand. And looking at their schedule, I can agree with you. Let's start it off at Houston, Oakland, Jets, at Arizona, at Cincinnati, St. Louis, then they have a bye week, at the Jets, at Indianapolis, Tennessee, at Buffalo, Seattle, New England, at San Francisco, Jacksonville, Buffalo, at New England. Now, look at here. They go 1-4 in December. Only team they're going to beat in December is Jacksonville. They play New England twice in December. Sandwich between, San Fran, Buffalo, and Jacksonville. And I already said Buffalo is going to sweep Miami, so I believe they go 1-4 in December. But I think they actually they beat Cincinnati.
No.
They steal one from the Jets. They beat Indianapolis. And, it's home in Seattle. I mean, it's home against Seattle. I'll give it to Miami. I think they're going to end up, like, very, very badly, dude. Very badly. I don't see them winning a game until, week 5 at Cincinnati, and that's a stunner. Wow. Well, no, I take that back. Depending on who Arizona has at quarterback, they might be Arizona. So there's a chance there. What do you think?
Well, you want me to give you what the record I think they're going to have?
Yeah, your record. Your record.
My record, 6-10. I think they'll eke out six wins out of here.
I
see them getting six wins. I agree with you then about them splitting with the Jets. I think they may historically split the Patriots, but I don't think this year. I don't see them winning at Cincinnati. I don't see that happening. And I don't see them winning in St. Louis. I mean, excuse me, in Arizona also. So I see them 6-10.
All right. Okay. All right. I can go there. I think they're gonna probably 5-11, but 6-10 is a possibility. Let's move on to one of your favorite teams, the New England Patriots. Nah, not the Jets. New England Patriots. I'm picking the Jets for last.
You can save them for last. What about you? Can save them for first. I could care less.
Firstly, I want to say this: schedule makers. How do you give the runner-up in the Super Bowl such a weak schedule? I will never know. But,
before you go any further, this is not the first year that this has happened. New England had a very soft schedule last year.
I know.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to figure this out. But
yeah,
anyway.
Same here.
Enemy lines, here we go. This team is going to throw the ball. The only reason the Patriots run it is to aggravate you. That's a good quote. Tom Brady is one of the league's premier players, and he will continue to be. He's going to have another incredible season. The number one tight end I would draft in fantasy football would be Rob Gronkowski, and the number two tight end would be the same team, Aaron Hernandez. Both of these guys are amazing, but I would be shocked if Gronk matches the year he had last season. Wes Welker may be the best slot receiver playing the game. On every third down of 6 yards or shorter, he's going to get the ball. Brandon Lloyd will take over Deion Branch's starting spot and fit in perfectly because he knows the scheme from his days in Denver with Josh McDaniels. He'll be productive, but he'll be the fourth most productive guy in this offense. There aren't enough footballs to go around. You're not going to see Branch or Chad Ochocinco much. The offense will run more two tight end sets than three receiver sets, because the second tight end is better than the third receiver. If the Patriots hand the ball off to Stephen Ridley or Shane Vernon, often they would not be utilizing the talent of this team properly. I wouldn't expect a surprise season from either of them. I feel the same way about Joseph Addai, who they just signed. The team is counting on him to pick up blitzes, not to run the ball for 1,000 yards. The sleeper is Shane Vernon. Stephen Ridley is going to be the popular Patriots back, but remember that he had fumbling issues last year, and Vernon, who had a nagging hamstring injury last season, was drafted ahead of Ridley in 2011. Deion Branch is their bust. Here we go. Schedule makers, boy, I tell you. At Tennessee, Arizona, Baltimore, Buffalo, Denver, at Seattle. Excuse me, they were at Buffalo and at Baltimore. Denver, at Seattle, Jets, St. Louis, in London. Then they have a bye week. Buffalo, Indianapolis, at the Jets, at Miami, Houston, San Francisco, at Jacksonville, Miami. Okay. First of all, this is ridiculous. Second of all, first half of the season, they're probably going to lose one game, and that's Baltimore. Now, Denver has a shot if Peyton is still standing upright. I think they beat the dysfunctional Jets, and it's terrible that they're going to beat up on St. Louis in London, but I think they'll beat up on St. Louis. Wow. Second half of their season, they lose to San Fran, they lose to Houston, and they lose to the Jets. So they lose. They go 5-3 in the second half. And they go, what, 7-1 first half? That's 12-4. Got these bastards at 12-4. It's ridiculous. Go ahead, Jerry.
You know what? I don't know what. Maybe it's the water today because I unfortunately, I you know how I feel about New England Patriots.
Yeah,
I feel the same way. I think from what I'm seeing here is a 12-4 record. I think they the last six games they go 3-3. I think because I think they lose a game at the Jets. I think they lose against the Texans. I think they lose against the 49ers. But they beat the Dolphins in Miami. They beat the Jaguars in Jacksonville. And then the last game is against Miami at home. So I think the last six games are 3-3. But that with that being the case, they're still 12-4. So I can't see any way around that. I'd be surprised if they lose win any less than 12 wins. I'd be very surprised.
I agree. Man, the freaking schedule makers.
Yep. Tell me about it, right?
I need to do the schedule. If they're going to play the stinking, if the AFC East is going to play the AFC South and the AFC West, at least put, you know, they did a good thing by putting San Fran and Houston in their bottom half.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to throw in San Fran, whatever, San Fran. Put Seattle down there, or Arizona down there in that bottom half, because at least it's another offense they have to play defense against
right.
in the later part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the South, okay, granted, you only got Houston, who's really going to be worth anything, and if Blaine Gabbert doesn't show up, you know, Jacksonville is going to be probably without MJD until, like, these last four games. Or whatever the case may be, because I think he's actually going to sit out, even though he shouldn't. Come on, man. That is rough.
I totally agree with you.
Let's move to the New York Jerry's.
Don't even try it. Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
He was a rat that jumped off the sinking ship.
That's right.
Jerry's
team. That's right. If you want to call me that, then I'll be a rat. I'll be a rat.
Well, other than Jerry's thoughts on the Jets, let's hear what one of the post coaches had to say. The Jets are starting to become the Cowboys. Talented, but underachieving. Mark Sanchez has ability, but he needs to be more committed to the craft. Coaches have spoon-fed him. When we watched him on film, we saw that he knew where he was going with the ball coming out of the huddle because the coach told him where to throw it. Seriously, the Jets needed to do something to get his attention, and Tim Tebow will get his attention. And I said the only way Sanchez loses the starting job is if his plays are so bad that the coaches have to make a move, because Tebow is not a passer in this league. He'll be the gimmick and wildcat quarterback when the Jets reach the red zone. Watch out for Tebow mania. New offensive coordinator Tony Sperano comes from the Bill Parcells tree, so he'll run the ball. That means Sean Green may finally get a chance to be a feature runner. Coaches will use Joe McKnight on third downs to create mismatches. Receiving core is interesting. The number one wideout, San Antonio Holmes, will be good this year. He'll benefit from the team's drafting Stephen Hill, who's a super fast kid. He's a younger Plaxico Burress with speed. Slot receiver Jeremy Curley will probably end up being the number two pass catcher while Hill is learning the offense. Tight end Dustin Keller is a beast who will hurt defenses if they fall asleep on him. Now, this Jeremy Curley person, it's the first time I heard of him, and okay, that's some fantasy fodder for you. Terrence Gannaway is the sleeper pick here. With the departure of LaDainian Thompson, the Jets need someone to be Sean Green's running mate. Enter the 239-pound Gannaway, a sixth-round pick who has the edge over the slender Joe McKnight. They have Mark Sanchez as a bust. I don't need to go into that because I know Jerry has a lot to say about his Jets.
Don't even try it, man. Don't even go there.
Let's hear what you got to say about what the rival coach had to say before we go to the schedule.
This team is a mess, an absolute mess. The quarterback, it's true that the quarterback's been spoon-fed, and he has a tendency to stare down his wide receivers all the time, and he always seems like his decision-making is a second or two late when he throws the ball. He telegraphs where he throws the ball, which is a very bad sign. Tony Sperano.
That's what the coaches said.
Excuse me?
That's what the coaches said.
Yeah, that, absolutely. I mean, I saw it habitually when I watched this team, and that's what the frustration of the wide receivers, because he always seems to throw the ball a second or two too late. I think his anticipation of a wide receiver to a spot is questionable, and his accuracy is questionable. This team is a mess. They got issues with their one of their best players, which is Darrell Revis, possibly holding out. They got issues in their defense, especially their pass defense, or their linebackers, I should say. They happen to be Tennessee older and slower linebackers that can't cover. They don't have a pass rush, which they tried to address with the pickup of their latest draft pick in the last draft. They got issues on the defense. They have issues on the offense with a questionable quarterback and a backup, which is going to just create a lot of turmoil and angst between the two quarterbacks and the fans. I could go on and on about this team. This is a very dysfunctional team, and it's going to show up, especially if the quarterback play is to say it in a nice term, spotty at best, because you got, in my opinion, dumb and dumber in the quarterback position. And dumb and dumber at the quarterback position. And you brought the right coach in for the type of quarterbacks you have. Let me put it that way. You brought the right defensive coordinator/head coach. And you brought in, you have the right offensive coordinator, because they're going to run the hell out of the ball because their quarterbacks are so inept.
Well, Tebow's going to end up being the goal line back. And a player on here they have listed that I didn't think about, which might be a fantasy sleeper if he steps up and does what he can do, is Chaz Schillings. I liked him when he was with the Raiders. And I know that the Jets turned down an opportunity to sign someone, Braylon Edwards, because they said that they were comfortable with Chaz.
Listen to what I just told you. You're not listening to what I just told you.
I heard they're going
to
run the ball. They're going to run the ball. They ain't going to throw the ball. I got
Trust me what I say. You have two quarterbacks that are not accurate enough. Even though Mark Sanchez, each year, his percentage has gone up in passing-wise. But he's still not a good enough quarterback to get the ball to where it needs to go to the wide receivers. The only person in the passing game that I would draft, it would be the tight end. That's it. That's it. I would not draft Santonio Holmes, Chaz Schillings, Jeremy Curley, Stephen Hill. They're all hot garbage. Trust me. Because they're not going to get the ball to him consistently enough to be effective in the passing game. Trust me, I'm telling you this.
Hot garbage. You love that term.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go over the schedule. And since you jumped ship and went to Houston, we're going to say Houston for the last team. By the way,
mm-hmm.
I like Houston as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think you think they're going to be very poor this year. And looking at their schedule, I think they might be as well. And it might be hot seat time for Mr. Ryan. Buffalo, at Pittsburgh, at Miami, San Francisco. Houston, Indianapolis, at New England, Miami, bye week, at Seattle, at St. Louis, New England, Arizona, at Jacksonville, at Tennessee, San Diego, at Buffalo. Why couldn't the Patriots' schedule be like this?
Yes, I know.
I mean, this is front-loaded to kill the Jets.
Yes.
And end pretty decently, but why couldn't the Patriots schedule be like this? The only difference is they're playing San Diego and the Patriots are playing the Ravens.
Right.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Yep.
Dude, I see them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 and 9. I see him at 7 and 9, dude. What do you got? Your your former teammate?
8-8. And that's with the usual suspects that you think they're going to beat. I think they're going to split with the Bills. I think they're going to split with the Dolphins. I think they're going to lose both games against the Patriots, to tell you the truth. I don't think they're going to win both of those games. I think they're going to beat the Seahawks. I think they may beat they'll beat the Rams, even though they're both those games are on the road. I think they'll beat the Jaguars. That's another game on the road. And obviously, I'm at 8-8, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're 7-9. I tell you that right now. I would not be surprised if they're 7-9.
Well, that's what I got them at.
Yeah,
I don't see them doing a lot, if anything, but to be truthful.
Right.
I see
one of their diva wide receiver blown up more than once in the season for not getting the ball or for getting the ball late or for getting the ball thrown over his head or down at his feet or whatever. Santonio Holmes is going to blow up. I'm guaranteed he's going to blow up again this year.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. I don't think the schedule makers were kind to him. But that wraps up AFC East. We got about 8 minutes, 9 minutes left of live there. We're going to go into overtime. The AFC South. It's very interesting because this is probably the weakest division.
Yep.
In all of football.
Yep.
And it's there for Houston to dominate.
Yep.
Over the next 2 to 3 years.
At least.
And and possibly be a number one, number two seed and make their run at the Super Bowl. So let's get into it as we talk about the Tennessee Titans. In the AFC South. Running, and again, this is from opposing coaches. Running back Chris Johnson did not play up to expectations last year. Why that was, I don't know. Maybe it was because of subpar play by the offensive line, which I agree. Or maybe he became content after getting the big contract. Whatever it was, he cannot produce like that again, or this offense is going to have problems. He's a guy who makes them go. He has the physical tools to light it up, but I don't expect him to have a bounce-back year. Matt Hasselbeck should consider calling it quits. His touchdown-to-interception ratio was 18-14 last year. The rookie Jake Locker had a better quarterback rating of 99.4 to Hasselbeck's 82.4, but didn't play as much. I expect the Titans to say that Locker's the starter and bite the book. Whether it's Hasselbeck or Locker, neither guy is going to have a big season because this team will run the ball first. Receiving core is pretty good. Kenny Britt is terrific wide out, but he's going to be a gamble coming back from ACL and MCL surgery. The other wide out, Nate Washington, doesn't skim. Rookie Kendall Wright fits in really well as a slot guy who can play outside. His arrival allows the Titans to put three receivers on the field, which will make it more difficult to stop the run. I love tight end Jared Cook. When he caught the ball, he caught it for big averages. The staff has to find someone for Locker to go to. And it's easier for a young quarterback to find a tight end than a guy downfield. I agree with that assessment 100% of the Tennessee Titans, by the way. They have Jared Cook as a sleeper. You need to go to Jared. The light finally came on for the athletic Cook. Cover the over the final three games of the 2011 season when he was the one best thing at his position in the league. That same production for an entire year would spell a breakout season. Matt Hasselbeck is a bust, and I can see that too. Now, Kenny Britt being a risk because of the MCL, ACL surgery, I think that's a pretty good saying because he's going to end up wearing a brace. He's not going to be as fast or as explosive as he was. I think the sleeper actually on this team is Kendall Wright because with Cook occupying the middle and you got people still worried about Kenny Britt and Nate Washington not being that bad of a receiver on the outside, that leaves space for Wright to grow and attack a safety who's going to be covering him.
And if Chris Johnson, if they go a three wide receiver set, they're going to do a lot of stretch plays, which works for Chris Johnson. He's a one-cut runner, and I think that works out well for him. What do you think about the assessment, JT, and then we're going to go over the schedule?
First of all, I don't take, and it's no knock on you, man, but I don't take too much to these fantasy football magazines, because it's obvious that there's one player that was shining pretty well near toward the end of the season because of the injury to Kenny Britt, that Damian Williams wasn't included in that assessment.
Correct.
Of the wide receivers. So I expect Damian Williams, who was a rookie last year, to be a second-year player to show a vast improvement on what he was able to accomplish last year versus this year. So Kenny Britt, first year back from an ACL, most players, majority of players, percentage-wise, history-wise, say that it takes a full season and the second season after an ACL for whoever, a wide receiver or running back, to get back to close to what they were originally were before they had the injury. So I understand that Kenny Britt is a very good wide receiver, but I wouldn't count on him being as good as he was prior to the ACL. It would be a wait and see, and it would be high risk, high reward if he drafted him in a draft. I like the Tennessee Titans. I think they're going to surprise a few people in a different skill positions. Like I said, I'm not talking about any running backs because I'm going to be talking about the running backs tomorrow. So I'm going to give you my assessment of who I think is going to be a bust and who I think is going to be a breakout or back to normal running back tomorrow at 10 a.m. on a master plan. but... we'll see what happens, but I think the Tennessee Titans are the competition of the Texans in this division.
I agree. Well, before you go to the record, let's go ahead and promo this week's programming on FSP, Fantasy Sports Politics Radio. Again, tomorrow, Jerry's going to be doing the Master Plan at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where he's going to break down, fantasy-wise, your running backs. And hopefully I'll wake up in time to go ahead and jump in on the show, because it's kind of early for me where I'm at, but I'll do my best to get up and work it out. Then, Kim is still on vacation, so Kim will not be doing the... Passion to Kenny is Tuesday, but she'll be back in August. Compassion to Kenny. Then on Thursday, Black has some great interviews from the U.S. Olympic male and female basketball teams that he's going to talk to Jerry about, as well as he's going to cover a couple games for us and discuss those things. And we're not sure who's going to be on the show, if anybody, but great interviews from Black and Jerry. Black and Jeff will discuss that. Then on Friday, David Aldridge is going to make his reappearance. He had to cancel last time. He's going to make his reappearance on the No Chaser with Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor this Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And DA is going to talk about the NBA draft as well as the free agency situation, like Dwight Howard holding the NBA hostage, but now it's no longer up to him. Then again, on next Saturday, we're going to talk about the NFC East and the NFC North.
Okay.
So next Saturday, my last Saturday before I have to go to school, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, I got one more Saturday. We're going to talk about that. So NFC East and NFC North. We'll get the two better divisions out of the way. Then we're going to talk about the NFC West and NFC South to end our fantasy football wrap-up and get you prepared for your fantasy season. All right, we're about to go into overtime. And, again, you can always catch us in our archives. After this show is over with, just come back to our page and click on it and maybe 20 minutes after the show's over, and click on it and check out what we talked about towards the end. I guarantee you will not be disappointed. Fantasy Sports Politics is a product of Victor, Jerry, Flat, Jeff, Mike, and Kim. We do it all the time. See you guys after overtime. It's been overtime right about now. JT, here's the schedule for the Tennessee Titans.
Mm-hmm.
2012. New England at San Diego, Detroit at Houston, at Minnesota, Pittsburgh at Buffalo, Indianapolis, Chicago, at Miami, they have a bye week, at Jacksonville, Houston, at Indianapolis, the Jets at Green Bay, and home for the final game versus Jacksonville. I'll let you give your breakdown, then I'll give mine.
All right. Like I said, I think this team is going to be the only contender to the Texans in this division, and I see the Tennessee Titans going 500. I think they're an 8-8, 7-9 team. They have a decent schedule. I mean, it's the first four games are like, I think they're going to start off pretty poorly in the first four games.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Patriots at the Chargers, the Lions, and at the Texans. I think those they're going to start off 0-4. I'd be surprised if they don't. I'd be surprised if they win in one of these games. But the first four games are very tough games. Three of the four teams were in the playoffs last year. Good luck. That's all I got to say. I see them 8-8. So.
I see them 7-9, and I see them surprising the Detroit Lions at home. I think they're going to beat the Detroit Lions at home in week three. I see them sweeping Jacksonville. I think that – I don't think Jacksonville's going to have a very good record. We'll get to them in a minute. But, 7-9, 8-8, possibly 7-9 – being their record. I think Houston sweeps them. I just think they need to, if Locker plays and brings that running ability as a quarterback and can be accurate, they have a good shot at being a little bit over 500, but I just don't see it happen. Kenny Britt is hurt. I like the Damian Williams kid. I think he'll fight it out with Nate Washington for that number two spot. And then Kendall Wright will jump in there. He'll get a shot at some point. But, 7-9, 8-8. I think that's a good record for them. Let's move on to Jacksonville, where MJD's going to be sitting out most of the season. That's pretty much why I feel as though this team is going to be dismal. I think they're going to have the number one pick next year. That's how bad I think Jacksonville's going to be. Okay? Even after spring minicamps, Jaguars.com didn't show a depth chart. Just said, check back. That's terrible. That tells you something right there. The team is in flux. Maurice Jones-Drew is the guy who makes the Jag go. He's every down back, he's going to run it, even if defense is putting nine guys in the box. I hate to say this because I really like the guy, but I don't think he'll be as productive this season. After 343 carries last year, he's going to wear down. He doesn't have a complementary backup to take some of the load. The Energizer Bunny is getting tired. Until the Jags get a quarterback, this offense is going to struggle. The coaches will give Blaine Gabbert every opportunity to beat out Chad Henne, but neither of them has performed well. Gabbert will be better in his second year, but not by much, because he doesn't have much by way of wide receivers. If Gabbert falters, you'll see Henne. Poor quarterback play last year hurt Mercedes Lewis. He had no receiving touchdowns. Before last season, he was a guy who scared us to death because linebackers had trouble matching up with him. If I was the coach in Jacksonville, I would use Lewis more. Rookie receiver Justin Blackmon is a great addition. I think he starts right away, taking any other Jags receiver, whether it be the free agent from Dallas, LaVont Robinson, or the undersized Mike Thomas, is not smart. the sleeper they have as Rashard Jennings. The odds are against Maurice Jones-Drew again running the ball 300 times for 600 yards while staying in one piece. Enter Jennings, who's hungry, fresh, and healthy after missing all of 2011 with a minor knee injury. They have Laurent Robinson as a bust. You read this because he's an ex-Cowboy, and I love it. The ex-Cowboy signed a contract typical of a high-level receiver, 5 years, $332.5 million. But he won't produce like one because he'll have overwhelmed Blaine Gabbert throwing to him and not Tony Romo. Very good point. Very good point. And I was a victim of the Mercedes Lewis situation last year because I drafted him in a couple of my leagues. And Gabbert just disappointed me so much. I know Mercedes dropped a few, but Gabbert is not the answer. And I'm glad the Skins didn't get him and waited this year. So, you got the floor, JT.
I tried to tell you last year I didn't like Blaine Gabbert, man. And I still really don't like him. It's quite obvious that he's a I'm trying to think of who is a quarterback that I can compare him with. How about
Billy
the quarterback? How about a quarter? No, he's worse than that. How about the quarterback? And I'm not picking on your team, but how about the quarterback you had? That was a high draft pick. He got traded to
Heath
a few
Shuler.
Yes. he reminds me of a Heath
wow.
Shuler that he has
that's
no no clue of what's going on and very gun shy about pass rush coming at him. If you watched him, if any of you people watched him last year, when the pass rush came. His eyes were looking downfield, but when the pass rush came, he was looking at the pass rush or one way to get out of to duck. Versus a quarterback that you see like an Eli Manning, like Phillip Rivers, and I'm not even talking about elite, the extreme elite. I'm just talking about a quarterback, general quarterback, looking down the field. In light of a pass rush, Blaine Gabbert did not do that. The pass rush came; he was looking at the pass rush, and the hell with looking downfield for anybody to pass it to. And I don't see that changing. I think it's something that he's gun shy now. And who was the quarterback from the Texans? I can't believe I can't remember this guy's name. The first quarterback,
David Carr.
Became gun shy because he was getting hit a lot, and he never shook that off. He never shook that off from the continuous pass rush and sacks. I don't think Blaine Gabbert can do that either. I think it's ingrained in his head, and this team is going to a four letter word that you don't want to hear of your team people is suck, and this team is going to suck.
I agree. I have Jacksonville at 1-15. I've got them at 1-15, and I have them only beaten Indianapolis once.
You know what, Vic? I can't believe that we're so in tune. So in tune. I'm telling you the truth. I have them down. I wrote all these out, and I have them down at 1-15. And the team I haven't beaten is the Colts.
Yeah,
that's it.
The first time.
That
happened when the first game, but the second game, the Colts beat them.
At the Colts, they're going to lose, and the second time, I think they're going to win at home. That's the only reason why I think they're going to win at home. I mean, win because they're at home, and it's the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them doing, especially if MJD holds out. If he holds out, they're doomed.
Yeah.
They're doomed.
Yeah.
They're doomed. All right. As I said, I think they're going to be the number one, getting the number one pick next year. And Barkley's going to be there. That's all I'm going to say. Barkley from USC is going to be there. Even though he might not be the number one player, that's who they need to get. Because he comes from a pro-style offense, and the kid's proven that he was better than this year's number one quarterback, Andrew Luck, head-to-head with less talent.
So let's just see what happens there. Let's move on to Mr. Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. There's not a lot of hope for this team, but there are a couple of sleepers on this team. And let's go get right into it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a coach, not a fantasy football guy. If I played fantasy, I don't think I'd take anyone on this team. They don't have any weapons. I know Bruce Arians, the coordinator, and he's going to throw the ball. The problem is, who is Andrew Luck going to pass it to? It would be great someday, but not this year. The next problem is Arians has to find a way to protect Luck. That's going to be a challenge with this offensive line. Reggie Wayne is a good receiver, but he's in his 12th year. He'll be the coach's go-to guy. When you only have one receiver, defenses can take that one away. Austin Collie is an inside slot possession receiver who will move the chain, but he's not going to scare any defenses. Donnie Avery has been hurt so much, I have no idea how much he can contribute. The Colts haven't had a real good kick returner in a while, and rookie T.Y. Hilton is pretty good. I'll bet you that the Colts' number two pass catcher will be rookie tight end Colby Fleener, just because of his familiarity playing with Luck at Stanford. The other rookie tight end, Dwayne Allen, is not that fast. The third tight end, Brody Eldridge, is a better blocker than a receiver. Donald Brown and Delone Carter will battle for the starting running back job, and I give the edge to Brown. Even though he's had injury problems, he's a good player who can catch the ball out of the backfield. Carter is a talented back, but he puts the ball on the ground too much. When you fumble the ball, coaches are afraid to play. Now, I agree totally with this assessment of the Colts, although I think T.Y. Hilton will get an opportunity to play a little bit of slot receiver. And if you do draft somebody other than Reggie Wayne, if you get Reggie Wayne, Colby Fleener is the only other person I would trust to draft in any round outside of the 12th round. Donald Brown would be the next person. That's it, because I know Donald Brown can run the ball and catch the ball. But other than that, I'm not touching Andrew Luck just yet. He would be a waiver wire pickup for me. And Donnie Avery has the ability, but again, he's been injured a lot. So that's my take on that. They have Donald Brown as a sleeper and Andrew Luck as a bust. And Jerry, I know you said Andrew Luck's going to be a bust already many, many times. So I'll let you have the floor.
Another four-letter word is bust. This kid, you're going to have to show me. Let me put it that way. Show me that you're an able NFL quarterback. They're going to be behind a lot. He's going to be asked to throw the ball a lot. He's going to be throwing a lot of interceptions. His school buddy is going to be, like you say, probably one of the options in fantasy football, Colby Fleener. Reggie Wayne, he's going to be trying to throw the ball a lot to Reggie Wayne also. But when you only got two weapons like that, I think those two weapons can get taken away from you. I'm not going to comment on running backs.
Again.
You
already know.
Again, but let me put it this way. The last three teams we talked about, I got some surprises that you may want to listen to. So we'll just take it from there. Not a good season, again, for the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Indianapolis Colts.
All right. Let's get ready to go down this schedule then.
Uh-huh.
Here we go. Close that door, please. Let's go. The Indianapolis Colts, 2012 schedule. At Chicago, Minnesota, Jacksonville. Bye week, which is always a bad thing for a rookie to have fourth game of the year.
Right.
Green Bay, at the Jets, Cleveland, at Tennessee, Miami, at Jacksonville, at New England, Buffalo, at Detroit, Tennessee, at Houston, at Kansas City, and finishing up at home for Houston. I honestly think this team loses every game. Okay. They win two games from November through December, and that's against Miami and Jacksonville. That's it. 2-14. Honestly.
Well,
JT?
Well, it'll happen early in the season, and it won't happen again. They'll win one game at home against the sorry Jacksonville Jaguars,
mm-hmm.
and they won't win another game. Another team in this division, 1-15. Another team. These two teams are going to be vying for the number one pick. That's how bad I think these two teams are. Look at the schedule. At the Bears, that's a loss. Home against the Vikings, that's a loss. At Jaguars, because those two teams are so bad, at home against the Jaguars. Because it's home and it's against the Jaguars, I think they win that one. Now, they come off the bye, they play the Packers. They're going to lose that. At the Jets, they're not better talent than the Jets. They're going on the road. Rookie quarterback, they're going to lose that. Against the Browns have a very good, decent defense, especially against the pass.
Mm-hmm.
They lose that one. At the Titans, they ain't beating the Titans in Tennessee. They go against the Dolphins. The Dolphins got a decent defense. They're playing at home, but I still think the Dolphins are a better team than Indianapolis. They lose that. Then they go against at Jaguars. Jaguars play lights out when they're home, the defense especially. They lose that. At the Pats, second team on the road, and at Patriots, they're going to lose that. Then they come back and play the Bills. The Bills are not a bad team. They're definitely going to be a better team than Indianapolis. They lose that.
Yeah.
Then they go on the road to play the Lions on the turf against that prolific offense. They're going to lose that. Then they come home and play the Titans. Titans are going to be fighting for a playoff spot. They're not going to win that. Then the next two games at the Texans, they're definitely going to lose that. At the Chiefs, are going to be fighting for a playoff spot. They're going to lose that. Then they go home and play the last game against a division rival, the Texans. Unless they're going to be resting a whole bunch of players and putting in their third string, they're going to lose that. So I see them winning one game, 1-15 against the Jaguars, and only because they're playing home against the sorry-ass Jaguars. So the two teams, 1-15, because they play home, they get that one win against each other.
Okay. Well, I'm giving the Colts a little more than one win, but here's my reason for that, for them getting two wins. They're moving to a 3-4 defense.
Okay.
And they have a brand-new quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how intelligent he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a brand-new quarterback to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line is not that good. They weren't that good with Peyton. That's why Peyton has the issues he has now.
Yep.
Their running game is suspect at best. Even if Aarons likes to throw the ball, they still have to run the ball at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Collie doesn't scare anybody. They're going to need that third receiver. And right now I'm going down that list. Reggie Wayne, Austin Collie, Donnie Avery, T.Y. Hilton. Come on now. They might have to play two or three tight end sets.
They don't scare anybody.
No.
Yeah.
No. And
right.
Fleener is going to be the best option in the passing game next to Reggie Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, it's going to be some tough sled. All right, let's move on to final team of the AFC South and Jerry's new team.
Absolutely. Damn right. Let's bring it on. I'm happy about this, man. Trust me. This team's going places.
Absolute power. Corrupts.
Absolutely.
So we're going to get to it. I also like the Houston Texans. I think they're probably my second favorite team next to my Washington Redskins. But let's get to the information that we got here going on about the Houston Texans. This offense revolves around Arian Foster. And give me 1 second. I think it's this offense revolves around Arian Foster. His running ability sets up everything. If he stays healthy, which has been a problem, he'll get you points because he'll run the ball and is an excellent receiver out of the backfield. He's definitely on the incline. The only negative about Foster's backup, Ben Tate, is that he fumbled 4 times in 180 carries or so last year.
He's good running the ball, but you won't see him on the field if Foster is healthy. Matt Schaub is a good quarterback. Now, a great quarterback. The Texans emphasize the ground game so much that he's not going to pass for big numbers consistently. Even though he has battled hamstring injuries, Andre Johnson still scares us. As long as he avoids injury, he'll be one of the top receivers in the league. Rookie Devery Posey is one of the bigger side, is on the bigger side, and I think he challenges Kevin Walter as the number two receiver. Walter's production will continue to fall. That's what happens with a receiver who has played that many years, 10, in the league. I like Owen Daniels. I think his production will go up. The type of offense Houston runs features a tight end off of play action passes. Fullback James Casey and tight end Garrett Graham will battle for playing time. The coaches have to decide whether they'll whether they're better off in two back or two tight end sets. I think they're more dangerous with two backs. All right. They have, as a sleeper, Randy Bullock, who is the kicker, by the way. Neil Rakers, now with the Skins, tied for fifth in scoring last year, despite a noodle leg. Bullock, college football's top kicker in 2011, is a Bigfoot and will outdo Rakers as long as he can keep it in the fairway. Bust Kevin Walters. I think that's a fair assessment. That Kevin Walters will be a bust this year. He's not really a big-time player to begin with. So, young man, give me a take on your team.
This team is due for you thought they were decent last year. This team is in my opinion, loaded.
I agree.
Got a second year with the defensive coordinator, they're going to be even better than they were last year. And the thing about it, Mario Williams didn't play the majority of last year, and see how prolific that defense was last year. They're going to be even better this year with a second season under the belt of Wayne Phillips. They're getting their beast back, meaning their wide receiver, Andre Johnson, as long as he can stay healthy with the offense that they run. With the running game that they have, and then offset it with the passing game with Owen Daniels, which I think he's going to have a bigger year than most people think, along with Andre Johnson. And I love the pickups that they picked up in the draft. I think these guys, one of them is going to so-called to the experts, a surprise of where this guy come from. I think that he's going to overtake Kevin Walter on the other side. I'm not exactly sure which one it's going to be, but one of them is going to I prefer Dvaire Posey, but I don't know which one's going to be. But I think Kevin Walter's days as the number two wide receiver on the other side are numbered because I think these rookies are very explosive and can provide a nice target for Matt Schaub, who's now 100% healthy and ready for training camp. The only thing I see holding them back from being really, truly explosive is if Matt Schaub gets hurt again. But I'm not worried as much as I would be worried last year when the rookie finally took over, T.J. Yates. He's got a year under his belt. He brought him within one play of going to the AFC finals. I like T.J. Yates if Matt Schaub goes down to not skip a beat. I love this team a lot. I've liked this team for a long time. I've jumped off the ship of the Jets because I've been tired of them, and this is where I'm jumping on. I'm not jumping on the bandwagon. I've liked these guys a lot. I introduced Vic and a lot of people to Arian Foster.
So
I've liked Arian Foster for a while, and I've liked this offense and this team for a while. So I think the big things are going to happen for the Houston Texans this year.
I predict the same thing. Honestly, I believe if Matt Schaub and Andre Johnson had not had the injuries they had, they would have been a better opponent for the New York Giants in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And possibly could have won the Super Bowl. I think that was their year. And again, they have a 2 to 3 year window here to rule the AFC South. They really do. And it will all depend on how they capitalize on the next two seasons. If Andrew Luck does pan out to be what they prove him to be or say him to be, that gives the Texans 2 years exactly to win it all, in my opinion. But let's go over the schedule. Miami at Jacksonville, at Denver, Tennessee at the Jets, Green Bay, Baltimore, and have a bye week. Buffalo at Chicago, Jacksonville at Detroit, at Tennessee, at New England, Indianapolis, Minnesota at Indianapolis. I'm going to say this. It's going to be kind of bumpy in the beginning, but they're going to end the season on a 4-1 record. I think they lose to New England because it's at New England in December in that weather. I'm just not sure what's going to happen there. But I see them maybe being the number two seed behind New England with the 11-5 record, maybe a 12-4, but 11-5 is what I have on there. What you got?
Well,
show your bias.
No, I'm a little conservative. See, you talk too quick because I have them at 10-6.
Okay.
I think I'm being fair here, and I'm looking at them splitting with their main division rival, which is the Titans. I have them winning at the Patriots, basically, because I think they have a better defense, and I think they can compete a lot better than most people think against the New England. And I do have them winning the last four games, like you did, last four out of the five games. I have them losing against the Titans in Tennessee, so. We just differ on those two teams because they're back to back, and the reason why, if you look at the game, they have three games on the road: at the Lions, at Tennessee, and at Patriots. So they lose the game against the Lions, and then the second road against the division rival, I see them losing that game, and then the third game against the Patriots, I see them winning that game, but. It is what it is. I still see them at 10-6, and I do believe that they're going to be contending for the AFC championship. Let me put it that way. I really believe, just like you believe, that this is part of their window for them to be a serious contender for the AFC championship, and hopefully this year they get to the Super Bowl.
Quite possibly. I can see them losing to Green Bay, Baltimore, and New England.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't beaten Detroit, but I think, and I'm just saying this because it's going to be tough. I think that Chicago game is at Chicago. It's a Monday night, if I'm not mistaken. No. It's the Sunday night game.
Mm-hmm.
It might be tough. November, that weather, that turf. Scares me a little bit. Anyway, so that wraps up the AFC South, you know, Fantasy Sports and Politics. That also wraps up the AFC. So let's get a prediction, Jerry. Who are your two teams coming to the AFC Championship, and who wins the AFC?
Well, I see the... and I'm just thinking about the other teams and what we thought about. I'm thinking the New England Patriots and the – I got to go with the Tennessee – I'm not Tennessee. I got to go with the Houston Texans. AFC Championship. Those two match up. I gave New England a 12-4 record. I gave the Houston Texans 10-6, maybe 11-5 like you said. They're going to be playing in New England. I think because of the defense. I think they have a running game. They have a defense. And they have, let me put it this way, they have a complete team versus teams. Yes. So I think because of that, I think this is Houston's year. I really believe that. Not because I'm a fan, not because I switched teams. I really believe, I thought they had a good shot last year. I thought they were going. I really believe Houston's going to the Super Bowl this year.
Okay.
I really believe it.
All right. I agree with you on pretty much everything you just said. I have those two at the AFC Championship game. I have Houston winning that game, the final game, in New England. But I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised if Baltimore finally beats New England in the playoffs, but loses to Houston in Houston. I wouldn't be surprised. Never get Pittsburgh, but without a decent running game, I can't put them in that series right now. And again, like I said, I pretty much agree with your assessment, and I have Houston winning the AFC Championship. All right, ladies and gentlemen, next week, NFC East, NFC North, and whatever else comes on our plate. Again, anything else you want to add, Jerry, before we get off the air?
Just tune in tomorrow if you're interested in fantasy football, and most people draft running back in the first round that know anything about football. I mean, only about fantasy. You got to draft one of these running backs I'm going to give you in the first round. Tune in tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to go run it right down. I think you want to listen.
He's just like Chris Brown. We go running, running. Just don't beat Rihanna up, okay? Just don't beat her up. ladies and gentlemen, I'm always on top of my game. I try to be anyway.
Oh.
I'm better than most.
Oh.
I'm better than the rest.
Oh.
I'm simply the best.
Oh boy!
Why, you have indigestion over there or something? You sound like you having like an acid.
No, I'm just listening to Tina. I'm listening to Tina Turner. I'm simply the best.
For real.
Simply the best. You know, you heard that song with Tina Turner sings, right?
Yeah.
And she happens to be a woman, right? Okay, I'm just saying.
You know what? old timer. I think you and Jay's and Dusty played in the shower a few times.
Oh, you know,
but
you
anyway.
don't even. Oh man, that's not right. That is not
so,
right.
So, time for you to end the show on a positive note. Let's
yeah.
be positive.
Yeah.
So you know what I need to do, JT.
Well, for me and Vic, and I'm surprised no one else called, but that it is what it is. So we had all the time to ourselves. You have been listening too.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got to live, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.